Hi, everybody. Welcome to Connectivity, episode 308. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, joined, as always, by John Raritan.
Hello, everybody. I join you from the heart of COVID land.
Yeah. And John is I guess, injured for this. He was questionable to appear, but he's fighting through. It seems like you're relatively on the back end of your COVID
I'm
experiment.
Mostly okay. My voice isn't as strong as it sometimes is, but other than that, I think I'm okay.
Still powerful.
Yes.
As backup, in case John's voice fails him, we got Alex DeFreitas. Welcome to the show.
I'm ready to engage mouthful mode.
Yes. Yeah, I'm about ready to eat a vending machine and then spit out juice boxes at my foes.
Become a living water balloon.
Yeah. Like, oh man, Kirby and the Forgotten Land. I mean, it did kind of get a sizable news drop in the Nintendo Direct. By the way, we're going to talk about the Nintendo Direct that
yes.
happened on February 9th, hours before we're recording this. We're just going to talk about the Nintendo Direct the whole time. That's it. That's all we're doing. You sent in listener mail next week. Yeah. This was, and I think we were talking about it before the show. I legitimately think this might have been one of my favorite directs, maybe ever.
Feels like it had something for everybody.
I mean, it had a lot for me personally.
It had one huge hit for you, and then a bunch of other stuff. Yeah.
Although the one thing that I'll say it was lacking was not as many exciting out now games. But you know, it's
fine.
I got things to play.
Are you sure you don't want to play a Dread mode for Metroid?
Oh yeah, I forgot that the Metroid Dread update that is out now.
Yeah.
Has anybody checked it out?
I'll bet Matt has. Matt's probably already beat the game like three times with it.
Yeah, and I guess with Metroid Dread, they announced that there's a free update out now that has Dread mode, which is one hit and you're dead. No matter what. Just one hit, you're dead. And then there's also a rookie mode that makes it so recovery you heal more. That's pleasant. Two opposite ends of the spectrum, and they're adding a boss rush mode in, what was it, March or April?
I think it's April.
Yeah,
that's one of those things where, like, that's cool. If I ever go to play that game again, I'm just gonna replay it as opposed to doing any of this extra content.
I might mess around with the one hit you die mode. Just I kind of want to just see how far I could get doing that. Like, I won't beat it, but doing Raven Peak without taking damage.
Oh yeah.
I might try rookie mode if I ever want to play it like more casually. Just do a quick run through.
Yeah, I would be curious if anybody who fell off of it due to the difficulty comes back for rookie mode and enjoys it. That'd make it worth it.
Metroid Dread wound up being one of those weird games like Shovel Knight's another one like it, where I hear all these people talk about like complaining about how hard it is, and I'm just like, I don't know, it was fine.
Yeah.
It seemed like really evenly paced. And it's one of those moments where I look inward at myself and I'm like, okay, some of those times when I probably complain about games being too hard, there are people out there that are like, what's up with this weirdo? I played it and the difficulty curve was fine.
I have to remind myself that when I played it, I was coming off of just replaying every single 2D Metroid game. So like I was...
Yeah, that did help.
I was very ready. But I know there were also other people who were in our Metroid game club who kind of bounced off of it. So I don't think that guarantees it. But yeah, I thought the difficulty was fine. But, you know, if people wind up enjoying it this way, wonderful. Even if I don't think it needs it.
I also have that problem with like every Metroid game where it's just that early bit is a little harder because you're a little bit underpowered comparatively.
Well, we talked about that with last week with Kid Icarus, where it's another one of those games that just gets easier as you go.
Yeah, just because you have more margin for error, you can like fire a lot more missiles off.
Yeah.
And like not really have any risk of like, oh, I ran out. Like that's basically by the end of the game in this final bosses that I recall hearing a lot of people having a ton of trouble with. Like, it's not like I definitely died on them a couple times, but never to the point of immense frustration. And some of that was because like I knew I got to the point where it's like, all right, the rate of burn on missiles is going to be counteracted by the fact that like I've got 200 of them. And I also like get missile power ups throughout the battle. Like I don't need to worry about. These are not a precious commodity.
Yeah,
but let's talk about the brand new games, not like the interesting but not that substantial updates that happen in this Nintendo Direct. So Xenoblade Chronicles 3 got announced for September 2022. We have no release date yet, but there's a third, well, I guess technically a fourth Xenoblade, if we're being specific.
We could probably go higher than that.
I guess, I don't know, Xenogears, Xenosaga.
Torna got its own separate release. Yeah. Does that count? True.
Is Xenomorph
connected a separate game? Yeah. This is a sequel to Alien. So Xenoblade Chronicles 3, which the reason why it's called Xenoblade 3 is that it is directly following up on things in Xenoblade 1 and Xenoblade 2, which if you go to Nintendo Report TV, you can actually find a video from around when Xenoblade Chronicles 2 came out in 2017 that details the connections between Xenoblade 1 Xenoblade 2, which would be very relevant for what was shown off in this initial trailer. Now, even though I'm the one kind of hosting this right now, I'm probably the one here that, I mean, I'll lay it out on front straight. I did not really like Xenoblade 2, but John, you did. So
I sure did.
From what you've seen of Xenoblade Chronicles 3, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling real good. Something about the art, and I know like you hated the art in Xenoblade 2.
I will say Xenoblade 3's art looks a lot less anime.
It looks a lot like Xenoblade 1.
Yeah. It looks like a blending of the two.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Well, specifically looks a lot like Xenoblade 1 Definitive Edition.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's presumably, you know, it's that, I'm sure it's that engine again that they've been running on since Xenoblade X. So it makes sense that there's some consistency there visually.
Is that what they did with Xenoblade 1? Did they like port it over to a newer engine?
Yeah, so Xenoblade 1 is ported to the same engine that runs Xenoblade 2. But my understanding of that is that project started as a much simpler HD, more of like a Twilight Princess HD kind of a thing.
And then evolved.
Into this giant, more of a remake. But that remake is definitely held back by some of the Wii code that's still living in there. They didn't rewrite everything from scratch.
Yeah.
And so that's, you see stuff like the grass draw distance being kind of hilarious in HD and stuff like that.
It's charmingly bad.
Yeah. So it does objectively look better, but it's not on par with Xenoblade 2. And of course, like a lot of the, like geometrically, it's pretty much the same as it was on. Yeah. On Wii. But this looks great. It looks, they've said already that they are going to tie together Xenoblade, the endings of Xenoblade 1 and 2, which if you've played those, you know that they are not separate games, and that they do tie together. And it looks like that's going to be very direct in this. I'll try to be as vague as possible, but you know, be warned.
I mean, there are straight up characters from Xenoblade 1 and Xenoblade 2 that are in this trailer.
Like it, maybe. There's a character. So there's these two warring countries. One of them led by a Hyentia who looks an awful lot like Melia, and the other one led by I can't think of what the cat, Gormati,
the cat person.
Yeah, the cat people. Nia. From Xenoblade 2. Yeah, Nia appears to maybe be leading the other one.
Yeah, I think Melia is a lot more like, yes, that is her. Whereas Nia, I think you could tell it's the voice actress, but other than that, it's not quite as evident as Melia.
And it looks like both of those, like they talk about, you know, Melia's side is using like piloting vehicles and machines, and Nia's side is using essentially blades. And then that the final shot at the end of the trailer, you actually see it's the sword of, I think it's the Mechanus's sword from the first Xenoblade is like skewered into one of the Titans from Xenoblade 2.
That's it's kind of badass. Like, yeah, not gonna lie.
So they're, and like I won't go into like how these two worlds are colliding. Even though we kind of know from previous games. I'm excited. This feels like it, and I know they've talked before about this is something that they've been planning to do for a little while now.
Tetsuya Takahashi had like a blurb on the, I think the official website for the game, mm-hmm. where he mentioned that before they even made Xenoblade 2, they had, there's like a, an image that they had that is being realized in Xenoblade 3.
Yeah, well, it feels cool. Like, I think Xenoblade 1 was definitely a one-off thing, and then since they've returned to it with Xenoblade 2, it feels like they've had a place they're going now. Yeah.
And as part of this, it seems like Xenoblade Future Connected, which was included in Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, that might have, it might have more import in the world of Xenoblade, because that is supposedly connecting to Xenoblade 3 in a little bit more of a concrete manner.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, everyone. We do have to play Future Connected.
and as for part of this of talking on the podcast in the past, I have to play Torna now that Xenoblade Chronicles 3 has been announced this year.
Now, let me posit a question. Are we going to have blades and drivers again? Or is this going to revert back to a more traditional, you just wield the weapon that you have?
So
what if it's both?
Yeah,
could be.
The way they've described the two civilizations, it's very clear that the more Xenoblade 2 style civilization seems to operate in a blade and driver format for combat.
Okay.
But then the one from Xenoblade 1 doesn't. And I think it's the case that you're two, they reference there being two main characters, and I think they're from two sides.
Yeah.
So it could be that each one plays differently, which could, like, the only way to make Xenoblade's combat systems more complex would be to do all of them at the same time.
Right.
So that kind of tracks with their evolution.
Yeah. Big fan of the flute.
Yeah, there's a strong musical focus throughout this trailer. You see a lot of flautists.
Love them flutes.
But yeah, it's exciting. It's coming out before Zelda.
Yeah, Xenoblade 3. It's a thing, guys. It's coming out soon. Like, yeah. seven months away, give or take a couple days.
They've had this done for like 2 years now.
Probably. Right after it, Xenoblade Chronicles X is going to come out. They're going to do the port finally.
Finally.
So during the Nintendo Direct, we got some news of a PlayStation 1 RPG that is near and dear to my heart is coming to Nintendo Switch. For some reason, Chrono Cross is coming to Nintendo Switch before Chrono Trigger. But I am so incredibly happy that Chrono Cross is coming out on a modern console that like people can play and people are playing, because I think the last console release that it was playable on was the Vita. And no one actually had a Vita. It was all just a myth.
Was that a re-release or was...
That was just, it was like a PS1, PS1
okay,
classic.
They were just the original version. Okay. Yeah.
But this remastered version, which is coming out to every platform, I think it's coming out Xbox and PlayStation as well. It's remastered visuals. It has some of those niceties that some of the Final Fantasy ports of the era have, where like you can turn off random battles. I don't think they've said anything about like speed up or like fast forward like the Final Fantasy VII has. But they're also remastering the soundtrack, which if you know one thing about Chrono Cross, it's that the soundtrack from Yasunori Mitsuda is maybe one of the greatest video game soundtracks of all time. And even if you play that game and hate it, I would imagine that you would come away walking away from being like, well, but the music was really good.
Can confirm, music is incredible.
Either of you, do you have experience with Chrono Cross? And if not, or if so, are you going to play this new version?
So I've been wanting to play Chrono Cross, but I haven't had a way to. Despite even actually owning a PS Vita, I think it's not on the store anymore.
You don't. What did I say? You don't actually own it. It's a myth.
Yes. It's an ephemeral thing. It's an idea more than an actual. Yeah.
If you think about it too hard, it'll just disappear from your hands.
Right.
Yeah. Stop thinking about it.
It's a dream that I had. But Chrono Cross, yeah, it's something that I'm really excited to play, and I might dive into the Radical Dreamers. I think we'd be remiss to not mention.
Yeah, that's super cool.
The Satellaview game is also going to be included.
Yeah, so it's a Satellaview visual novel.
Yes.
That is essentially the foundation for Chrono Cross. It has Surge, Lynx, and Kid are in it. And it kind of is, I've never actually played it. I've only read about it before. I look forward to playing it in this version. But it kind of like outlines like what it's almost like a rough draft of the early part of Chrono Cross. is it canon or not? I'm not 100% sure, but it's just cool that like they're actually going through and bringing back this thing that was on Satellaview, the Super Nintendo like downloadable online service. And I think did we did a fact check on it that this is the first Satellaview game to ever get re-released after Satellaview, right?
We could be wrong about that, but we couldn't find both I and Donald looked and we couldn't find anything, any other instance of a Satellaview game being re-released. We conferred with Justin Berube and he also had no idea if any of them had ever been released.
I know, like, there's some of the, I mean, like, you can play some ROMs and emulators of them.
Oh, Waking sure, yeah, they're available, but stuff. As far as, like, official releases, I think this may be the first one.
And it's just cool to have it there. And it's one of those things that, like, I look forward to messing around with Radical Dreamers. Is it good? I don't know. And honestly, I don't care. Just the fact that it's there is really cool. And yeah, Chrono Cross in itself, like, maybe it's a properly rated RPG because I think it is like one that's like super critically acclaimed, like sold all right and everything. I think it doesn't get talked about enough because
it's overshadowed by Trigger, right? Like it's supposed to be the sequel to Chrono Trigger and yet it plays completely differently and is a kind of a departure.
It's also, it's one of those things where how do you follow up a game like Chrono Trigger?
Right.
Like, Chrono Trigger is widely considered to be like one of the greatest games, greatest RPGs of its era. Like, how do you follow that up? It's not like it's something where it's like, oh, you know, like Final Fantasy VI or Final Fantasy VII is a masterpiece. How do you follow that up? It's like, well, even with those, like, you still had five or six games in the series before then. So it's not like the first Final Fantasy came out and people were like, 10 out of 10, perfect game, never make another one. Chrono Trigger came out and kind of was like that, where like this game's incredible. It was like a dream team of developers, and then all of them left and did other things and left one guy, Masato Kato, to be the director of Chrono Cross. And he did work on Trigger, but like he's not Yuji Horii. He's not, I forget some of the other luminaries that were a part of Chrono Trigger off the top of my head, but like it's a who's who of both Squaresoft and Enix at the time. Whereas Chrono Cross is Masato Kato, who is a personal favorite, like, you know, game creator of mine. Some of his earliest work is on Ninja Gaiden on NES. He's responsible for a lot of these story scenes in those games. And then he went over to work at Square and worked on like the story for Chrono Trigger and then worked on Chrono Cross as a director. And now he did that game, Another Eden, that actually recently had a Chrono Cross crossover, which maybe we should have read more into that. Think that this is coming soon. But the thing with Chrono Cross is that it's not Trigger. It is a Kill Your Darlings sequel. It almost like, John, you might not like this comment, Chrono Cross is kind of the Last Jedi of Chrono Trigger.
It subverts your expectations.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you if it was the Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts of the Chrono series.
I mean, like, that also fits, like, because that's the thing. I mean, like, and it is weird because, like, the Chrono series is two or maybe three games if you count Radical Dreamers, in which case, then Chrono Trigger's the weirdo. But with Chrono Trigger, a lot of it's linear through time. At a basic level, Chrono Cross is about it's dimensional warping. It's not like you're going to different time periods. It is you are going to your home world and then another world. And as you find out very early on in the game, there is kind of a dividing moment of you play this character Serge, looks a lot like Chrono, no relation. And I don't think that's like, I guess that's not a spoiler. I don't know. But Serge is this character who he's in home world, and then he gets transported to another world and finds out that he died in that world.
That's a bummer.
And that goes through this absolutely bonkers, weirdo, wackadoo story that along the way, like, does cross over to Chrono Trigger in a lot of very impactful, meaningful ways.
Okay.
But at its base, like, it has that similarity to Chrono Trigger in the fact that while Chrono Trigger is about time, this is about going between dimensions instead. And you only go between home and another world. There's a lot of different twists along the ways. A lot of weird things happen. Some of the, like, probably one of the things that I think kind of maybe dulls some of the impact of the story even though I think the story overall is really solid, is the fact that you have 40 playable characters.
Yeah.
Which at a certain point is preposterous. Like, one of the first characters you can get is a dog named Poshel, who's a big pink fluffy dog, and he's adorable. There is like a spaceman that you can get that kind of looks like Olimar. There's also a dude that, like, I think initially was supposed to be the villain that joins your party in Chrono Trigger.
Magnus?
Yeah, Magus. Yeah, there's a guy that like was supposed to be called Magus and then he wasn't, but it's still kind of like, oh, maybe he's like Magus. There's all these things, because I think through development there might have been more overt initial ties to Chrono Trigger. But like, there's such a dizzying amount of characters, and some of them are really dumb. Like, a cook joins your party. There's like there's a Harlequin who becomes kind of important to the plot. But the trick with it is that it's from that era of localization. You could call it like the Dragon Quest accent era, where you have this rotating cast, and basically everybody has, like, no matter who your party is, they'll kind of react in similar ways. But the difference is that they'll all have like weird, stupid accents. And one of like a very important character that you meet early on is this girl named Kid, who talks in a Cockney accent and says arse a lot.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it's just like seeing like all these things mutate depending on who you have in your party is very funny. Yeah. And then with that too, the battle system, which it's been a while since I've done a full playthrough of the game, but the battle system involves like using different elemental abilities to kind of like set the field in a way that becomes strategically interesting and complex. And like, it's something that I haven't really seen a lot of games do well. It's a game that I've been wanting to revisit for a long time. It's a lot of like pre-Nintendo World Report times where I used to like replay games more often. Chrono Cross and Super Mario RPG and even like Trigger and Final Fantasy VI were games that I used to replay on a more frequent clip. And then the mixture of age and doing this whole like video game press thing, I stopped replaying games as much, especially long RPGs.
Yeah.
But Chrono Cross is a game that I am ecstatic that it's coming out April 7th. It's not even that far away. And this is something that I think I vaguely threatened for a long time. I'm not going to shut up about this game unless I play it and I'm like, oh God, no, it's held up terribly. This is bad. And I saw people kind of knocking the visuals in the trailer. And like what?
It's a PS1 game.
It's a 2000 PlayStation 1. What the hell do you expect?
It looks really good for PlayStation 1.
Like, yeah. I will say, I think some of the, I mean, yeah, pre-rendered backgrounds and everything, like, okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, those definitely show their age, but, like, it doesn't look gross. It looks fine.
I don't think you get to stand there and say that Final Fantasy VII hasn't aged a day, but that this looks ugly.
Yeah.
Oh, Final Fantasy VII has aged several days.
A day or two.
You can even see some of it in what they showed, like, it's just a little cleaner, a little smoother, yeah. Like really... Really looking forward to seeing how the game comes together.
I think there is new 3D models too.
Yeah. The characters look like they've at least been retextured.
Yeah.
And remastered soundtrack is worth noting, which I think we heard a little bit of it in the trailer. Like, once again, one of the best soundtracks, not even a video game, just best soundtracks ever. That game's the soundtrack is incredible. It's amazing. Tour de force.
And this era of Square is just very fascinating to me. The PS1 era, because they're just trying so much different crap within the JRPG space because they're at the top of their game and they just have so many different teams. So I you know, this is along those lines of like a Vagrant Story or a Xenogears, where it's just like they're doing something different, and I'm really excited to play it.
So another game that was announced during this direct that is also tied to Square of ancient days of the 1990s. Weirdly, this game's being published by Nintendo outside of Japan. That is Live Alive, which is did you guys ever hear of Live Alive before today?
I know that name. I have heard of it.
It's one of those. This is one of those JRPGs that I've ever made to the West that's like secretly great. But other than that, I don't know all the details for it.
So there was actually, I've been thinking about playing this kind of in the past year or two. There was actually a shout out to the podcast Retronauts. They had an episode on it. I think it was sometime in 2021. But this is a 1994 Super Famicom game that kind of under the radar compared to Square's other games at the time, because this would have been like a, you know, contemporary with Final Fantasy IV, like around the same time as, you know, like Chrono Trigger would have been like a year or so after this. But it was also the directorial debut of Takashi Tokita, who at this point is one of he's worked at Square Enix consistently since 1985. Here's just some of the things that Tokita has done since directing his first game, which is Live Alive. He directed Chrono Trigger, Parasite Eve, Chocobo Racing, The Bouncer, Final Fantasy IV on DS, Final Fantasy IV, The Four Heroes of Light. What else did Tokita do? More recently, there is a certain point where he fades into producer land. But instrumental into Final Fantasy, and like a dude who went from this to making Chrono Trigger.
The gimmick with this one is that you play as different characters going through their separate stories. Do they converge at any point?
Yes. To my knowledge, and this is also not having played the game, but just kind of, you know, been interested in possibly playing it, is the way it works is that there are seven different stories across different eras. There's like a caveman era. There's a Wild West spaghetti Western era. There's a future area. I think there's kind of like a samurai area as well. But they're all throughout different times. And I think part of the hook was that all of these seven stories were handled by different manga artists. Okay. So they all have different character designs. It has a soundtrack by Yoko Shimomura, which is also worth pointing out because she's up there with Yasunori Mitsuda as one of the greatest video game composers of all time.
Right.
So there are those seven different chapters, which I believe you can take in any order. And then there is an eighth chapter that after you play all the other seven unlocks and kind of converges everything. And kind of talking more specifically about that would be spoilers, but I think they might have even mentioned it in the trailer, the fact that like there's seven chapters that you play and then everything converges, but it's supposed to be a fantastic game. And one of those things about it is how it kind of goes into each of the eras, like making sense in that world. Like the caveman era, I believe you don't really have dialogue. I think it's just like emojis and stuff like that, because they would not have language then.
Right.
So it's a Camelot RPG.
Yeah. And then stuff where it's like you have different battle systems where, you know, in the future, I think it's probably more like ray gun based, whereas you'll have guns in the Wild West, but maybe it's sword fighting in the samurai era or something like that.
And I think the most interesting is a 2D HD game.
Yes.
Yeah, HD 2D game.
HD 2D.
Which does, it is one of those things where it's why it's surprising to me that it's published by Nintendo outside of Japan. Because to me, I've seen a lot of these remasters, you know, like Saga Frontier, Legend of Mana, even Trials of Mana, which, I mean, I think Trials of Mana was revealed in a Nintendo Direct, but I don't think it was, Switch and PlayStation 4 at the same time.
Yeah.
But all those games, like from that, you know, we're taking a PS1 or a Super Nintendo game or whatever and bringing it over, like none of those were deliberately console exclusive. Like Romancing Saga 3, I believe, came out on a couple platforms. It's a little weird to me to see Live Alive be a Nintendo Switch exclusive, at least at first, but this game seems to be more in the bucket of the Octopaths and the Bravely Defaults of the world, of being that, like, you know, Switch first. I mean, I believe it's still being published by Square Enix in Japan, but it's just Nintendo throughout the West.
And this might come to PC within a year, but it's probably going to move on.
Yeah, Switch. Like, I think, I know Octopath, it definitely happened with Bravely Default 2, I think, also came to PC.
Yes, it's on Steam now, I believe.
Oh, did it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's probably the path that Live Alive has. It's just weird to me to see, you know, that remake come in that fashion. And it does make me think that it could be the HD 2D side of it is part of the reason why Nintendo's kind of attached to it outside of Japan. And will Dragon Quest III, the HD 2D remake of that, will that also be a Switch exclusive published by Nintendo outside of Japan? And I kind of think it might be.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're throwing some money at these two, like outside of just publishing them outside Japan. If they're that involved in it, I feel like they might have some money tied up in the back end to either help produce them or, I guess, just get them as timed exclusives. But
yeah, I mean, there's definitely some kind of, I mean, like, I feel like Square's not going to give these games out for free.
I don't know how Octopath Traveler and stuff like that did outside Switch. Like, I know they did okay on Switch, right?
I think, yeah.
On Switch it was?
Octopath was very successful for what it was.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, maybe they just do well on Switch.
Yeah, a million unit sales for Octopath, it would be very successful. And I forget if the million sales were reached before or after the PC release, but I definitely remember hearing that Octopath cracked a million.
Yeah, I believe, you know, if Live Alive gets a million, that would be crazy.
Yeah, there's a note. I have the Wikipedia up here just to make sure I've got some of my facts right. It said it was considered a failure back in the day for selling 270,000 units.
It's because they didn't release it anywhere.
Yeah, no, it was only in Japan. There's not a lot of people there comparatively.
It's a very small country.
But yeah, that's Live Alive. And that and Chrono Cross, Square's doing work for Nintendo Switch.
Mm-hmm.
So Mario Strikers Battle League was announced during the Nintendo Direct. It's coming out on June 10th. And I don't know about you guys, but it was a delight to see weirdly aggressive Nintendo characters play soccer. John, yeah. How are you feeling about Mario Strikers Battle League?
This one came out, I mean, this was a good direct in general for not having anything leak in advance, but this one really feels like it just came out of nowhere. I definitely thought that this particular branch of the Mario sports universe was probably dead. So when that came on screen, I was very surprised.
It's been 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally been 15 years since Mario Strikers last came out.
Right. This is equivalent to Metroid Prime 4, but right. For soccer.
Yeah.
And on top of that, like, Mario Strikers is such a departure from what would now be the Mario the style guide.
Yeah.
It's so weird that they kept it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Some of the things feel a little bit more muted than charged on Wii.
Did we see Daisy yet? That freak.
Oh no, I didn't see Daisy. She was probably in there for sure.
It's Waluigi crotch chopping.
She's the final boss.
But we have Charge and Chucks playing goalie now instead of the critters. Or the
yeah, I mean, that just seems natural. That
at
seems
least
natural.
He's playing something.
He's playing some sort of sport.
Somewhere, it's yeah. It's a game that is somewhere referred to as football. So yeah. I would say he's getting closer. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a
finding
journey.
His way home.
I'm trying to get him in Mario Kart Tour right now. Like, Charge and Chuck is having a year, man.
I want a Charge and Chuck, like, Historia that charts his progress in his quest to figure out how, like, what sport he's playing.
Like, they gave Captain Toad his own game. Give me, like, Charge and Chuck Sports Superstar. And, like, yeah. He's just trying to figure out how to play football, and he just, like, plays every other sport.
Yeah.
Who is the high-ranking, like, Nintendo exec who just really loves Charge and Chuck? Because he's charging quite.
I need to meet
them
and shake their hand and be like, thank you, sir.
Charge and Chuck is secretly, like, Miyamoto's equivalent of Psylux. Like, he just really likes him and wants him to be relevant.
He's also blue, yeah.
Yeah.
But so, from what we heard of Mario Strikers Battle League, they didn't say too much specifics about... The first game kind of had like some cool tournament modes, but this one they focused primarily on some of the online components. Where, well, I guess just multiplayer in general, because they said you can have 8 players on one system, 4v4, play this game, which is really cool and potentially very exciting if I ever do a PAX panel again.
If we ever are around that many people at once ever again,
I will play Mario Strikers Battle League with them, and then we'll all wash our hands. But probably the cooler part, and this is what honestly makes me think Next Level Games is definitely making this, because it actually has like thoughtful online play. There's an online club mode where you can have 20 people per club, and you basically compete online to beat other clubs and be the most successful club. It seems pretty neat.
As long as the online works.
Yes.
They've proved they can technically do it with Mario Party. Let's just see if they can do it a second time.
I recall the online in Mario Strikers Charged, which is 15 years ago, was okay.
I remember playing a whole lot of it back in the day, and it was fine. I mean, these are 15-year-old memories now.
My
but...
standards were different then.
Yes.
But I remember it being okay.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm very excited for another Mario Soccer game. I love me some arcade soccer. This is certainly some arcade soccer. There's like some goofy things where like if you get a special orb, you can score a goal and it'll count as two, which like that just sounds like a gimmicky Mario Soccer game. And I think there is a world where I think Mario Strikers Charge kind of aired on this a little bit more, where it was if you knew how to do the different gimmicks very well, the game just completely broke down.
Yeah.
Where like there were certain character abilities that you could use and like the balance was a little out of whack.
Hammer Bros were busted.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of where the original fell apart for me in terms of local multiplayer was you got to a point where certain characters were just objectively going to win.
And that's the thing that makes me hope that with Mario Strikers Battle League, we can have like balance patches come out.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's the thing that happens now. We've never had a Mario Strikers game come out in a world where that happens.
They could have released the Mario Strikers update channel for the Wii.
But I am like, I just feel like that's kind of the knock to me about Mario Strikers on GameCube and Wii is that once they were out in the world, people discovered ways to kind of break them. And the fact that this game could be a little bit more living, then maybe the game will not be forever broken. It could be tweaked along the way.
Yeah.
But June 10th, can't wait. Definitely very excited to play me some Mario Soccer.
There are some a couple of differences with this version or this entry. There you can like smash two courses together or two soccer fields. Did you see that the in the intro?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, and then also You don't play as a captain with partner characters. You all play as I guess main Mario Striker characters, because in the originals you would play as either Mario, Luigi, or Daisy. Or,
yeah, and then you'd pick like you know Toad and yes, Hammer Brothers and right. Monty Mole as and, the rest of your team.
Exactly, but this one you could have like a Luigi and a Wario and a Peach all playing with each other. So that will be interesting to see how that plays out.
That'd kind of require that they have a lot more characters on their roster.
Yeah. Because part of the thing of the originals was that like you could have two Monty Moles on a side.
Yes.
But yeah, maybe they'll expand it. Maybe we can have Pink Gold Peach. We can have Tanuki Mario, baby Wario,
could be Dr. Goomba game. Tower.
Yeah, Dr. Dolphin. Get all the faves in. I mean, honestly, go weird. I would assume probably just judging by, I mean, Mario Kart Tour, I feel like might be a decent example for like the amount of the variety of characters that are potential.
Sure.
For Mario Strikers, like Pauline, probably a reasonable chance to show up.
This would actually be one of the most qualified things that Dr. Goomba Tower could be doing. Like this would work.
But we'll see. They'll have to like model several different armor sets for each one because like none of those have like
they do have that like that power-up system in this of where you can equip your characters with different armor to tweak their stats.
Right. He's got a lab coat.
The lab coat it's like an Axiom Verge when you get the lab coat and then you can like teleport around.
Give him some shoulder pads on top of the lab coat.
Yep.
Be fine.
I don't know how the lab coat stays on his non-existent shoulders in the first place. Don't add shoulder armor to the lab coat. That just makes me angrier.
But yeah, I think that might be all we have to say about Mario Strikers Battle League. Mm-hmm. Out June 10th. Maybe one of my most excited games for this. Chrono Cross is still tops, but this is up there.
Agreed.
It's a weird list.
All right, so Nintendo kind of pulled something out of left field. Like I feel like I heard nobody talk about this ever being a possibility. Nintendo Switch Sports is coming out in April. Wow. Alex, where are you feeling?
I am feeling like several it's 2006. Different yeah, it's so wild to like see that logo and to hear the ba bum 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 bum. Yeah, it was
it's such good music.
Yeah, I felt like I was traveling back in
they
time.
They gotta get that one dude who does all the like if there was Wii curling, here's the theme song. Get that guy to do the music for Nintendo Switch Sports.
Oh, is there? I need to find this guy.
Oh yeah, no, I thought it's incredible. I forget his name. Gabe Gundacker, I think is his name.
I think he's like a Vine star, I think.
Yeah, he's a Vine star, but he does this thing where he's like, if they did, you know, Wii kayaking, this is what the music would be like, and it's all bangers.
That's funny. Yeah, well, when I saw Switch Sports, I was, yeah, transported back in time first, but also, like, I'm so confused with what Nintendo is doing and how they're positioning the whole, like, Wii and Mii branding, because I thought, for sure, with the Switch, they were trying to step away from it. The Miis were no longer front and center like they were with the Wii and the Wii U.
But they were still on the system.
They still, like, had them around, but they weren't, like, shoving them in your face. But then they also announced Miitopia with, like, a crazy Mii editor. Then we find out that Breath of the Wild NPCs are literally just Miis walking around the world.
I mean, it's a good technology for creating NPCs.
I guess so. That was wild to find out, by the way.
So that's one of the things is I remember in real time, just a few hours ago from when we were recording this, during this segment that they had, because this was a segment, they actually had like a demo during this, which it took me back to the Wii era when they used to do that all the time.
Right.
But people were talking about like, oh, they got rid of Miis. And I don't think they did. I think they're just using that more in-depth Miitopia editor and displaying them in a different way.
Yeah, they can format that data however they want. They could format that to be like realistic people if they wanted to.
You're saying that these characters that we're seeing right now are still Miis, but they're just...
So you look at Koizumi and Takahashi's characters.
Yes, those are very much Miis.
Those are Miis.
Yes.
And I think if you look at some of those other characters, would not be shocked if they are like in Breath of the Wild, where they are, you know, something built from the Mii creator that may be given a different lift. Maybe it's a way to kind of separate computer players from like human players,
right?
Because maybe the human players, maybe they look more like traditional Miis, whereas a lot of the computer players, maybe they're displayed a little differently.
Especially since if they have to work in tandem with regular Miis, like they're probably already built on the same skeletal system. Like it probably really is just a different shell on the exact same characters. I don't know why they did that, but it makes sense to me that they would still technically be Miis.
I do have a note. I forgot that I wrote this until I was just looking over because for the list of the sports and stuff. Right when this was shown, I just said Miis died on the way back home to their planet. Because that's what it seemed like at first. It seemed like, oh, they're throwing out the baby with the bathwater and getting rid of the Miis. But we did have six sports confirmed for this, at least on launch on April 29th. Tennis, bowling, and sword fighting, which they called Shambara, and then soccer, badminton, and volleyball, or the three new ones. Out of the three returning ones, what ones are you most excited to play, John?
Out of the returning ones, probably just tennis. My favorite.
Oh, it's got to be bowling. It's got to be bowling.
Did you play bowling on Clubhouse Games? Because that harshed my buzz for how they could do bowling.
Oh, I haven't bought Clubhouse Games.
Oh, it's not good. Oh, the bowling is not good. The game is great. The bowling, not good.
That's hard to hear. Hopefully they'll fix it.
I'm holding off for the golf mode. That was my game of choice on Wii Sports.
Yeah. That's you're getting ahead of us a little bit. But there's a free summer update that will let you play soccer with the leg strap from Ring Fit for some reason. But there's also a free fall update that's going to add golf, which I will agree with John that I think that is probably the aspect of this that I am most looking forward to, because I just want a good Wii golf game.
And I'm happy with the golf game I already have in Mario Golf, but like I'll take more.
I think there's a vision of we will have like a golf game for every season if Switch Sports Golf is good, because then you have your like, I'm just gonna hit back and use the motion controls with the bros, and that'll be Switch Sports. You have your like Looney, maybe it's bad at times, but it's kind of fun and charming. That's Mario Golf Super Rush. And you have this looks like crap, but like it's a very good sim fun game. And that's PGA Tour 2K21.
And then there's Golf Story somewhere. I don't know where that.
Yeah. I mean like then we're starting to get into a different world. There's RP the golf Legends. Yeah. Vibrant golf scene on Nintendo Switch. Like did not think about how much variety we have, and like everything's a little bit different.
Oh, we could go on the eShop and just live off of golf games for a long time.
I'll do that for a couple months. It'll be my hunger strike.
There's that horrible golf mini game in Mario Party Superstars that's just wretched.
Oh, that is a bad one. That is a really bad. It's also like there's no feel for how far you're hitting the ball.
You have to like pray to God that you go last so you can kind of like,
because then you can tell what everybody else
does.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel bad because it's a game that keeps on popping up whenever I play with my kid, and then he's just like, why? I'm like, I don't know, son.
Why is game, father? Why?
But, I mean, I hope as long as the motion controls hold up for the Joy-Con stuff, I think sword fighting could be super fun.
Yeah.
If tennis and bowling can just, they don't even need to totally match how good the Wii tennis and bowling were. If they could just be on a similar level, I'll be very happy. Because I did not like the motion controls for tennis or golf in the Mario tennis and golf games.
You know what's weird is the original Skyward Sword on Wii was famously built from the code they used for Wii Sports Resort for its sword fighting.
Yeah.
And I would be willing to bet that the sword fighting in this is repurposed from Skyward Sword.
That's awesome.
Probably.
Yeah. The circle is now complete.
That makes a lot of sense. So something that I'm looking forward to, or I'm not sure if that's the right word. What I'm looking for is like a progression system or something to keep me coming back to this game, because I'm not sure. I think these are all like party games. You get a group together and y'all just laugh while you're making crazy motions, playing tennis or sword fighting or whatnot. But why would I pick this game up if I'm just going to play it by myself, is the question I'm asking myself. And hopefully they have an answer for that.
There's online.
Sure. Yeah. Hopefully
the
that's
online
good.
Actually looked, it looked good. I mean, they showed off some like kind of tournament style stuff and it looked.
Yeah. And like different
it looked
modes
potentially
and stuff.
Good. Yeah.
I do agree with you that the single player longevity of this game could limit its potential.
Right.
I do. It kind of depends on how complex soccer, badminton, and volleyball are, because mm-hmm. I think those are the ones that could have the more longevity than I think some of your tennis, bowling, and shambara.
Right. And literally it could just be like achievements and unlockables, and I'd be fine.
Yeah. And that's something that Wii Sports Resort did very well, where there was kind of like, if memory serves, there were challenges or achievements or whatever name Nintendo decided to use that was an achievement. That you would get like different stamps for doing different things in those modes. And I remember getting really deep into that because I think by the time Wii Sports Resort came out, I don't know how often I was like having like let's hang out and, you know, bowl with the bros. Like, I think Wii Sports Resort was a game that I got a lot of mileage out of playing largely by myself more than I played with others.
Sure. Yeah.
Soccer looks really cool though. And I'm kind of fascinated by the idea of like, how they're going to get it to work where it's going to like measure how you're running. That just seems really silly.
This feels like one of those Wii Fit mini games.
Yeah.
More it so does. Than a
Wii Sports
those are
game.
Fun.
Those are,
yeah.
Those
oh,
are
no
quite
complaints.
Fun.
It just, they have a different feel to them than the Wii Sports stuff did.
Yeah. And badminton could be good. Although I feel like badminton and volleyball are also like very similar things and also very similar to tennis.
Yes. Right. There's a lot of overlap there. Though volleyball did look like volleyball, there were multiple actions.
Yeah.
Which I feel like could separate that out a bit.
And badminton, I mean, badminton, there's definitely a difference in the fact that like there's no bouncing of the shuttlecock, which also was I the only one that chuckled a little bit when the Nintendo narration said shuttlecock? Because I did.
Yep.
But I mean, there's nuance between those games, but it's dependent on the developers of this game to make sure that those nuances shine. And I mean, Wii Sports historically, even if like Wii Sports Club might have been misguided in how it was presented, all of those were good. So mm-hmm. I've got some faith here that Switch Sports is going to be pretty rad.
Yeah.
And worth noting that this is a $40 game, so more of a budget title, which is nice.
Yeah, and they're also doing an online playtest in February 18th to 20th. It's only going to be the three returning games, bowling, shambara, and tennis. So if we're seeking out the nuance of badminton and volleyball, we're not going to see it yet. But definitely curious to see how bowling and tennis controls.
Yeah, I'll crush you guys in some online tennis.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, April 29th. It's really soon. I'm excited.
It is.
Yeah,
fun
wait.
Stuff.
A lot of these April is stocking up to be quite busy.
It's for my birthday.
Happy there birthday.
I got you Chrono Trigger.
Star Wars The Force Unleashed coming April 20th.
Ah, damn.
420 blaze it. 420 blaze it, man.
Why'd they get me the worst Star Wars game? That's not true.
Is that your exact birthday? Or?
No, it's just 420.
April 3rd.
It is Hitler's birthday.
Okay. It is.
I do. So for me, if you'll remember from when we talked about on the podcast with my like predictions for the year, where I was like, I think Kirby will come out on my birthday. I was a week off, but guess what is coming out on my birthday? The first 8 of 40 million Mario Kart tracks coming out in the next 2 years.
Yeah. Give or take a million.
I do, like, how wild was it? Like, when they started talking about Mario Kart 8 and they're like, paid DLC, I was like, oh, yeah, they'll do like a pack or two. Yeah. And they're like, 48 courses over the next 2 years.
A lifetime supply. Yeah, I am baffled that it took them this long. This feels like this should have been like year two of Switch. They should have just been like, here come the Mario Kart. Because ever since Switch launched, like to this day, this has been one of, if not the best selling game on the platform for a platform that it even isn't even native to.
Like you want to know what updates they added? There was like, what, like
they didn't do anything.
VR support for Labo?
Like it, yeah, they, it now runs at 60 frames per second instead of 59. That was the update they did from the Wii U version.
Well, they also did it like a completely different battle mode. All the DLC was That's included.
True. They should add courses to the battle mode.
Yeah. They should make the battle mode better.
They did. This was the better. Did you play battle mode on the Wii U version?
I mean, I reviewed it. It is.
It was just, yeah, and you gave, I remember your score.
I gave it a higher score.
And it was all because of the battle mode. That's what I remember.
But here's my 5 years after the fact reflection. I think the cops and robbers mode that they added is bad.
What?
The what? Cops and robbers battle mode isn't that good.
That's just objectively wrong.
I think it is complex in a way that does not belie how like the fun simplicity of Mario Kart. I've realized, and I accept this, that I am one of those weirdos that think battle mode peaked on Nintendo 64 and GameCube. I don't think Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I think it's the closest we've gotten to it. But people knock the square Mario Kart double dash battle mode stages. But like, I love playing on that damn GameCube. It's a good one. And you know, hide it out on Block Fort. Good times.
It's weird that this is where our impasse comes. But I guess I challenge you to accept it.
We should play this game online and play the battle mode and see if it holds up.
We won't talk about the amount of time that I regularly do just boot this game up and go into battle mode online with randos. we'll pretend that I don't play it like it's Call of Duty.
But so I mean, if you do that frequently, is it the cops and robbers mode is the one that you play the most?
That and just like the regular like balloon
battle.
But yeah,
because I think balloon battle is just like a little bit more like easily understandable. And I think cops and robbers, balloon battle is your
slayer.
Yeah. With my time with the cops and robbers mode, I mean, there's some other name for it. I forget. I think it is a crapshoot as to whether or not you're going to have a good time online.
I think it lines up with the general Mario Kart mentality of like it doesn't actually matter if you're good at the game. It's just going to be silly the whole time. And I think the cops and robbers thing kind of lines up with that. You spend, you know, you run around for a while and then spend an equal amount of time in the prison yelling at baby Rosalina as she just drives right past the button. And it's great. It's a good time.
We should play it online. We should get people online and play this game. Especially because we're gonna have 45 new courses. They're 48. I picked a large number thinking it was try. It was not high enough.
It's well, and the, something we haven't mentioned yet, and a trend that I am very excited to see continuing, because I think it adds real value to the expansion pack, is that all this DLC is included with the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack.
So I saw them put the $25 price. Was that for one pack or was that for all of them?
I think that's for the season pass.
Yeah.
That's absurd. That's stupid.
Dirt cheap
Nintendo's
anyway.
Dumb.
But then they're also making it free with your subscription.
Yeah.
Which, they, so like now,
easily
I just
could have made that $50.
Get, oh, yeah. But the fact that I'm just going to sit here and Nintendo's just going to just dump Mario Kart courses onto me.
Funnel Mario Kart courses into my mouth as
so
I happily
exciting.
As I yeah. happily play Kirby 64.
I'm terrified to navigate that menu, and I thank God that Sakurai didn't make Mario Kart 8, because this menu would have been unusable. Like, that would just be murder.
There's actually a really easy way to do it. It's just you just make a second screen.
And a third. And a fourth.
Well, I mean, you just do two, because you have one. Like, there are, I believe there are 48 courses, or there might be more than 48. I think Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, I think there are 48 courses already.
So this doubles the game. This is Mario Kart 9, by the way.
It's Mario Kart as a service.
Is it, though? Because they're all remastered ones.
Well, but, like, that's the other thing, though. Some of these remastered courses are
from Tour.
Newer than the courses in Mario Kart 8.
That's true.
I'm so, like, throwback to the game that came out 4 years after this one debuted.
Right. Like, that's, I would argue, and those courses have A, never been, like, permanently available, like, because Mario Kart
great.
Tour cycles stuff out. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, Mario Kart Tour cycles stuff out. So these courses have never been, like, just in a, like, permanently available, playable state.
Yeah, like, I will accept people dunking on Mario Kart Tour for, like, them being people who don't like a great mobile game.
Sure.
But I will not accept people dunking on the courses, because the new
courses
they added
wonderful.
Are across the board fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that, like, they seem to know that.
Yeah.
And that they're going to let me play it in, like, and I like Mario
With the
Kart
controller.
Tour. Right, I like Mario Kart Tour, but given the option, this is how I would prefer to play Mario
right.
Kart. And I love that. That I'm going to be able to play those courses in my preferred format. And maybe, who knows, maybe some people will play those courses on the DLC and go, huh, maybe this Mario Kart Tour thing is worth a shot. And they'll give it a try.
I've given it two tries, and
it's a great game.
I like it. I don't play it as much as, like, Neil and Justin, but I boot it up pretty regularly. It stays installed on my phone.
If I could play it with a regular controller, I think I'd love it, but...
I would say I would play it significantly less if it wasn't, like, a thing that, like, I played with my son to chill out with.
Sure.
Like that is definitely, like, made Mario Kart Tour a permanent fixture, as opposed to, like, something that I would probably play it more similarly to you, John. Especially now that I'm not in an office, because I'll be real, Mario Kart Tour, perfect bathroom game.
Oh yeah.
Like if I'm at work and, like, I'm like, you know what, I just feel like hiding for 10 minutes, I'm just gonna go play Mario Kart Tour.
I put a lot of time in at the mechanic that I get a lot of Mario Kart Tour playing time in there.
It's a good game.
But yeah, I'm glad they're doing this. This is insane.
We should get back online. Play some Deluxe. Play some Cops and Robbers.
We should
Prove
set
me
up
wrong.
A, you know what game has a great tournament system? Mario Kart 8.
I forgot that it does.
Yeah, you can do, like, online tournaments where you just, like, sign in with a code, do your races, get your times.
Yeah.
Like, it's all asymmetric. It's great.
So other stuff, the big opener for this Direct was Fire Emblem Warriors, The Three Hopes. Alex, I feel like this is your time to shine.
I guess it is. I'm a big fan of Three Houses, but I haven't played the first Warriors game. All I know that is that they, you know, they focus a lot on the Awakening and Fates characters and less on legacy characters. This looks to be more of like a Age of Calamity style game where they're taking a successful story within the franchise and maybe giving it, I'm not sure what they're doing. This could be the golden route where it's like everybody gets to be friends, or this could be a midquel, because if you look at the character designs, they look like they look like they're in between the ages of where they end up at the end of Three Houses. But then why is Byleth there? Because Byleth is supposed to be gone during the 5-year gap. I am not sure what this game is doing, I am interested.
It's Age of Calamity.
Yes.
I was going to say.
It's going to be non-canon, and it's going to be during that 5-year period.
Sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it's like Age of Calamity, then they can set up some sort of, like, a something
There's
will come
some
through a time portal.
There's going to be some fucking little robot that will just be like, Byleth is here.
I'd be very excited to see the little robot. But yeah, we're going to get more time to spend with these characters and hear the voice actors. It's gonna be fun to play, but if I'm honest, I was really hoping for a more traditional game going into this.
Me too.
So seeing that first trailer and being like, oh, this is a Warriors game, it's it's not a huge bummer because I am excited, but this was, I have to readjust my expectations. But once that's done, I think I'll be really interested because there are some interesting wrinkles. Like there seems to be like a map that you play on. I'm not sure if that's like a level selector or if there's actual strategy involved in how you play. That would be interesting. Like if there's a sort of meta strategy that goes along with like what you're doing in the actual maps. So we'll see. They didn't really show off more as far as like gameplay wrinkles other than yeah. that.
But if they put in the same amount of work as far as like the lore and story and stuff go that they did into Age of Calamity, then, you know, even though it'll play differently, hopefully it'll be a substantial piece of, you know, you'll be able to enjoy it on that standpoint of just being a good story within yeah. that world, which the first Fire Emblem Warriors was not.
Right. And there are some things within the world building in Foldland, and especially some character dynamics between a couple of the characters in there. I'm not going to spoil too many things, but it would be nice to see that fleshed out. Mm-hmm. And this is an opportunity to kind of revisit that story, because it does seem like Three Houses, as great as that game is, as much as I love it, it seems very rushed. Parts of it do. And so this is an opportunity, hopefully, for that same team. I think it's also Koei Tecmo, so I'm sure there's a lot of overlap. Koei Tecmo
just makes everything now.
Yeah, they do. There's a lot of overlap probably between who made Three Houses the strategy RPG and who's making Three Hopes the Warriors game. And so hopefully there's some opportunities to tie up some loose ends story-wise. And maybe we'll see like some of the DLC characters better distributed into the story. Yeah, there's some good stuff that can happen here, but like I keep saying, we'll see. I don't know. This was just like a taste, and hopefully we'll get another longer trailer that kind of breaks things down for us.
Yeah, we still have while it's end of June, June 24th, mm-hmm. I think is when it's coming out. I think honestly, for me, I'll just actually play other routes in Three Houses. Like hearing this, I'm like, you know what I'd rather do than play the Warriors game of this is play the Fire Emblem one of this. And if I want to play a Warriors game, actually play the DLC in Age of Calamity.
Yeah,
I still need to do that.
I do that too. I keep forgetting that it exists.
It's weird. I love that game. It's just that, guess what? With Warriors games, even as much as I love them, there's too much game.
Sure. Yeah.
So I restarted Age of Calamity because I wanted to compare it to something else that I'm not allowed to talk about yet at the time this podcast goes up. But it meant that I am now on the road to playing through it again, which will also mean playing all the DLC.
It does seem like Three Hopes runs a significant amount better than Age of Calamity does. And maybe it's because lack of grass.
It's very early.
There were some shots in that trailer that were bad.
I might need to go back and rewatch some of it, but I know like you can get into single digits with Age of Calamity, so not a high
Age
bar.
Of Calamity had some moments.
Mm-hmm. What's the release date? June
24th. And we had another one, a game announcement that I mean John, I think when we had first talked about it, you're like, no, they can't do it.
It's
No
a bad
Man's
idea.
Sky coming why to Switch you... in the summer.
Why are you doing this?
Yeah, I think you said, like, is this a cloud version? And then we see it, like, nope, that's not a cloud version.
Well, so when they first started showing it and they're wandering around the planet, and I've watched this trailer a few times now, that stuff on the planet at the beginning looks, like, really good. Like, draw distance on, like, grass and terrain and trees and creatures and all that looked great.
Texture detail was good.
Yeah, and then you got to space, and it was like, okay, there's like the temporal anti-aliasing artifacts, and like, yep, there we go. But yeah, so this is not a cloud version. They are doing this on hardware, which is, I'm sure it sounds like a broken record whenever we find a game we're like, oh, how did they get this running on Switch? When it's like we've seen a million crazy games run on Switch now. But this is one of those where, like, this game was kind of a benchmark in terms of, like, just from a technical sense, as far as game development goes, and as far as how games could be designed. So Like, it was definitely a game where it felt like for the PS4 and Xbox One, that was like the generation that made a game like this possible. And to have it running on the Switch is essentially to have it running on the 360 and PS3, which is just outrageous. But the footage they've shown, like, you can spot where some cutbacks are, but when you compare it to like a comparable game like Ark running on Switch, it's a huge difference. And I honestly have to wonder if like Nintendo themselves are putting some money into this, kind of like they did with Witcher or something that to get this going, because this feels like an extra difficult port. I think we've talked about it on the show before, but I will mention that Sean Murray was asked back when they did the VR update, which included PlayStation VR support, if they had considered a Switch version. And he did comment that a lot of the optimizations they had to do to get it to run on PlayStation VR, which required them, you know, essentially rendering the entire game twice, so lots of optimizations and cutbacks needed to be made. He did make the comment that a lot of those optimizations would actually put it pretty close to where they would need to be for a Switch version.
Yeah, so maybe a lot of that work was done.
Yeah. They may have just taken the VR version, taken one eye of a PSVR version and said, can this run on Switch? But I'm excited. I'll try it. It's a fantastic game. So I'm glad to see it being more places.
Did they say anything about like crossplay or no?
I don't think they did, but I don't for sure remember.
I know they said crossplay with MLB The Show, which is hilarious because MLB The Show, like, I'm okay with MLB The Show looking like hot shit on Switch because, like, it's one of those games where it's like
Sony's first game on Switch, Neil. Give them a second.
As long as it looks fine and runs fine, like, it doesn't matter. Like, make the UI nice. It's okay if you, like, the face is a blurry mess of every player. But it's just funny the fact that, like,
Pokemon Legends looks better than this Sony game.
It's just the idea that, like, you could be playing, like, the butt-ugly Switch version and playing against, like, someone being able to, like, look at the sweat pores on Shohei Ohtani's face on PS5.
Yeah. Right?
Like, that is hilarious to me.
No, that is really funny.
It really will, like, they have to get... It's not like... I feel like with something like golf, you can get away with some kind of rough frame rates here and there once, like, things are moving. But with, like, baseball... Like, you do need a pretty good frame rate from the moment the ball leaves the pitcher's hand to the moment it gets to you. Like,
yeah, that's, once that ball is in play, like, that needs to follow a consistent physics path.
Right, especially if you're playing online with somebody who's probably playing it at 120 frames per second.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to need at least 30.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be really fun and interesting.
It is a Sony internally developed by PlayStation Studios game.
Yeah.
So it'll be fascinating.
Published by the MLB. So
yes.
Or published MLB Advanced Media. Yeah. So it's this weird thing. I honestly don't even fully know what the story is. But like if you look at, you know, like the MLB The Show page, it is MLB Advanced Media, MLBAM. Like a couple years ago, it was basically once MLB 2K kind of just shut down, I think it was like maybe 2012, 2013 when that series died because it was bad. Then MLB The Show was literally the only licensed baseball game out. Then MLB Advanced Media worked to make the god-awful RBI baseball series, which that did appear on Switch for a couple years. And I think that series is dead. I think it came out last year. But it has not been announced for this year yet, likely because now they have the show on every platform.
Yeah.
Because I think it was like two or three years ago, I think they announced that like the show was going to come to more platforms. And I think like Nintendo also shared that tweet or something. So like it was evident that like it was a matter of time. And now we're at that time. But yeah, it was basically when there was no third party license holder for Major League Baseball was like, the Thanos will do it ourselves. And but now they're not going to have a league this year because there's a lockout. So
right,
MLB The Show better be good.
Yeah, what do you like? How do you calculate the stats for a game without a leak.
I mean, I guess it's because they have the license with Major League Baseball and the Players Association, so the show is going to be fine. This might be getting a little bit in the weeds for people who don't follow sports, but like, so there's a lockout going. I think it started December, where it basically means that the MLB, the baseball owners and the baseball players are disagreeing on something about, I think it's about financials and stuff like that. I've not followed it super closely other than the funniest thing, which was the minute the lockout went into effect, which was done by the baseball owners, MLB.com, there's every story that mentioned an active player was removed, and every team page no longer had photos of the players. It's just like the generic, like, here's like a silhouette of a man with a hat on was the image for every player.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
A lot of the players have that as their profile picture on social media, which is hilarious. Because it's a brutal fight right there. Like, there's definitely good reporting on it out there. It's something that I'm not as invested with Major League Baseball overall. I've been looking forward to the show, but if you are curious to know what the hell these people are arguing about, it people are talking about it anyway. You know, a person who he might not care about baseball, but boy howdy do I care about him, especially watching the delightful video of Shigesato Itoi talking about how happy he was that Earthbound and Earthbound Beginnings are available on Switch. I know, John, you don't give a fuck about Earthbound. That's okay.
Nope.
Because I don't really disagree. The game's aged like milk in the gameplay-wise. I do think that the soundtrack for the Super Nintendo game is incredible, and yeah. I love the ideas of that game a whole lot. It is an old-ass RPG.
At this point, they really should just, like, release a remaster that kind of like lets you speed up through things and turn off random encounters. Like, give it to Square Enix to make a 2D HD of
yeah. No, I mean, I would,
that'd be cool.
I would love that. I'm also totally fine with them putting them on NSO, because I think that stuff like save stating and rewinding does help a lot of those games, just making them a little bit more enjoyable and playable. I can't see myself ever playing Earthbound Beginnings. But man, I could maybe see myself booting up Earthbound on Switch.
It's selling somebody like it's Earthbound, but it's even more aged. Yeah. Like, it's a hard,
like,
that is
like
a
it's
hard
the kind of thing
sell.
Where like I can hear, like, you're like, okay, like, it's a little grindy, but I like Earthbound on Super Nintendo. Like, I can totally get people liking it a lot. If you're like, I love Earthbound Beginnings, I'll be like, are you okay? Yeah. Do I need to get a doctor or something?
You need someone to talk to, or
yeah.
It definitely feels like they only released it because they had the script running around, like they had a localized version ready to go, and they just hit the button.
Yeah, no, I mean that is 100% why Earthbound Beginnings yeah. exists. Is that like I don't think anything about it has changed. It is just literally they had the localized version of the NES game from the 90s, and
did people buy it? Like, I know like Earthbound did well on the Wii U Virtual Console, or like as well as a Wii U Virtual Console game could do.
It was priced higher.
It was.
I think it did well enough.
Okay. Because
I also can't imagine that expectations were that high.
Right. I would also say, in regards to like remastering Earthbound, I do kind of wonder if Nintendo looks at it and goes like, NSO release is about the amount of actual demand there is for this game. Like, I don't know how well a remaster would actually do, but yeah. Maybe that's my extremely negative view of the game.
It's also, you need, if you do anything, you need Itoi involved. Like, that's,
yeah,
that, like, that dude is Earthbound, and Earthbound is him.
They got him involved
really?
In that little video, the Japanese
yeah.
Direct.
Oh, is he in the Japanese Direct?
I believe so.
Oh, it's weird that they didn't just subtitle that and put it in ours.
But I think that, I mean, like, Itoi, I mean, he definitely, I mean, he had the friendship with Iwata. Like, that was a lot of why, yeah. like, Earthbound even happened. Yeah, famously, for people who don't know, like, yeah, I think Iwata came in kind of the 11th hour and helped, like, recode Earthbound on Super Nintendo to get it to even work. Like, and I think it's like they had to redo almost the entire game. But I think I think Iwata and Itoi were friends for decades. But No, I mean, I played like the first chapter of Mother 3 on my Analog Pocket. Mm-hmm. Man, it would be so cool if that game could ever get released. It's really good. Like, tremendously good. But I don't think it'll happen. But hey, hope springs eternal.
That'd be one where if remastering it was the only way to realistically go about releasing it.
Yeah.
Like, because from talking to you, it sounds like they have to make so many changes to the original to release it in a modern context that at some point, maybe it would be easier to just remaster it. And
especially if you have eToy on board.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the thing where, like, I'm not even overall that invested in the Earthbound as a series, but if they're like, we're doing Mother 4 and Shigesato Itoi is not involved, he hates us now, then I would be like, that's not a real game. What are you doing, yeah. Nintendo? Come on. Also, I think eToy might still have like copyright, like I don't think it's fully Nintendo's property. I think eToy has some ownership over it anyway.
Right. Wasn't it made by like Creatures or Ape?
Yeah, Creatures Inc. helped out with Super Nintendo. I think Ape is eToy's company that is listed there. So I guess kind of the last thing, I mean, there was a lot more in this Direct, but we're already running longer by our standards.
That's true.
Klonoa Fantasy Reverie Edition, which is Klonoa 1, which they had me there. It's also Klonoa 2.
It's both of them. It's great. Oh, man. Okay, so there were rumblings of Klonoa being like, what was it?
Katamari Damacy Reroll, and then there was Mr. Driller Drill Land.
Yes.
I think there was a ratings leak or something that had those three and also like a Klonoa revival thing or something.
Yeah, it was something sort of like paperwork filing, maybe ratings or
Klonoa Encore, I think, is what it was.
Klonoa Encore was the word that was kind of being passed around. And so I've been hopeful of this happening ever since I got really into Klonoa early last year. And so I played both of the GBA games and the Wii remake of Door to Phantom Isle, which is the PlayStation 1 original. And we're gonna get both games. This is a series that hasn't had a release since that Wii remake in 2008. This is up there with Mario Strikers as far as dead franchises go. They're being revived by this Nintendo Direct. So, yes, this was the Megaton announcement for me, and I am going to beg you to purchase this video game. Just think, it's two games in one. It's like it's a BOGO.
It's like they're giving you money back.
Yeah, it's just,
you'd be
it's
losing
such a
money
good deal.
Not buying it.
Klonoa 2 has only been on PlayStation 2 and has never had a re-release since. So this is super special, not just for people who enjoy the first game, but like the second game has been locked away for such a long time. And also, it's the first time it's coming to a Nintendo console, the second game. If you like platformers, this is a really nice one. And even if you don't love platformers, like the Donkey Kong Country is really hard for me to get into because it's just so difficult. But Klonoa is a little bit easier, a little bit more slow paced. It's more about kind of methodically figuring out the how to like use enemies to get through obstacles, because you'll pick up an enemy and then you'll inflate that enemy and then you'll use an enemy to bounce off of them and like chain double jumps. It's really, really fun. It's one of like the first 2.5D platformers, and it's just really charming. The music's great. It's super good. So please, if you have a heart, if you have a soul, buy Klonoa Fantasy Reverie for the Switch, coming this June, right?
Yeah, I think the date. Hold on, I've noticed.
July 8th. I got that wrong.
July 8th. Yeah,
one more month. July 8th. That's just like a week before my birthday. So, very
happy,
excited
happy
for
birthday,
that one,
Alex.
Yeah, thank you.
We all get birthdays.
We all get birthdays.
Yay!
Yeah, John, you get Star Wars: The Force Unleashed. Really excited for you.
Thanks. I do like in the trailer for that they point out that there's motion controls enhanced from the Wii version, as if this were like, that's a different game entirely. And like, you didn't, they're not the, like, no, that's not how that works. You didn't just
bring the fighting game into this one?
I doubt it. I'm pretty sure this is just the 360 version. Because like the Wii version,
there is an entirely different
release. Yeah.
There is a one-on-one combat mode that they showed.
Yeah, it's here.
So are they putting stuff in from the Wii version?
Or is it based on the Wii? That would be hilarious.
Oh, God, that'd be horrible. I'm pretty sure it didn't look like it was the Wii version.
Oh, my God. It's the Wii version.
No.
I am looking at a press release that we got during today's Nintendo Direct. That's why it looked like shit.
Well, it looks like shit on 360, too.
But I was like, this looks bad for a 360 game. It is just the Wii version is coming to Switch.
Oh, no, please tell me that they're putting like the Xbox, like the Xbox 360 version is coming to like PS4.
Play as Starkiller, secret apprentice to Darth Vader on a mission to hunt down and destroy the Jedi, dive into a rift, blah, blah, blah. Force power and lightsaber combos, multiplayer dual mode, and support for Nintendo Switch Joy-Con motion controls.
Why?
Who wants this? Like,
Asajj Ventress fans.
We both legitimate. Is Asajj Ventress even in the Wii version? I don't know. Like, the Wii version wasn't good.
No.
I mean, debatably, neither was the other version.
No, neither one is good, but this is... hang on, I'm pulling back up the trailer. Yeah, now that I'm looking at it.
Yeah, the Wii version got a 71 on Metacritic. Okay, to be fair, 360 version got a 73 on Metacritic.
Yeah, no, they're not. Like, neither one is good, but, like, it's just, like...
Did we review it?
The 360 version is, you know, like, the version that people played and have good memories of. Like, that's, if you go and buy it on, like, on Steam or something, that's the version you get. You don't get the Wii and PS2 version.
You get the
PSP version.
Some of these review from Game Revolution. Unfortunately, though, beating the crap out of a Rancor is cool. It's quite flawed, thanks to the wonky camera and targeting system.
I will say...
Sam Witwer have this win.
I will say... and of course, this is Aspyre, peddlers of a variety of Star Wars games of various qualities. So, like, they've clearly gone in and, like, redone some of the textures. Like, some of these characters have, like, actual, like, bump mapping and, like, complex materials that the Wii didn't support. So they've, like, halfway remastered it, which I guess is why I thought it looked like the 360 version. The texture work on the main character is not how he looked on Wii, because the Wii could not have supported those materials. This is so weird.
All this means is that we're this next step closer to the Force Unleashed 2 Ultimate Sith Edition, where you get to kill Luke Skywalker.
Or Force Unleashed 2, where they have the weirdo Wii version Smash Brothers game is in it.
Oh, is that the one with the Smash Brothers clone in it? Yeah. That would be fun.
This is... Aspyre is a fascinating company.
Yeah. I mean, like, good for them.
Maybe the argument is that the other version is already out on Steam. Like, that has a modern release.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not allowed to release... Because I know, like, they... Like, for all the ones they've done, like Republic Commando, since that's backwards compatible to modern Xboxes, they didn't re-release it on Xbox. They only put it on PlayStation and Switch. So maybe it's like, if there's a modern way to play it, we can't put it on that platform.
Just wow.
I need to set up an interview with somebody from Aspyre.
I just have a few questions.
What gives you the right?
How dare you?
Yeah.
Bring me Star Wars Bounty Hunter on Switch.
I'll say, if you are interested in like older Star Wars games, and this generation's been chock full of those re-releases. Oh.
And like Aspyre is
solid. Give me KOTOR 2.
Aspyre has like a 55% success rate on Switch. So
I give it
like
a little higher than
odds.
That.
65.
Yeah, I'll agree to that.
And like some of them they fixed. Like
yeah,
Racer they forgot to put in the sun. But like
I will say, I still had a lot of fun with Racer, even if it didn't have the sun.
Racer's great. That game held up like. For as ugly as that game is, when you just take the N64 ROM and run it in HD, plays really well. And they fixed the giant text box at the top of Knights of the Old Republic now. So
yeah, now I should probably play that. I bought it. And then like saw like some of the issues with it. I was like, I'll wait a little bit before playing it.
That was the nice thing is, having not played it much on other platforms, I didn't realize that that text box was too big. I was like, that's kind of a large text box, but like, what are you going to do? Game's old.
So I saw some complaints about the Direct that it was for like 40-year-olds. None of us are 40. I think I'm closest to. Still got another 7 years. What do you guys say about like a lot of the stuff kind of skewing to, you know, I guess like you know, millennials and older?
What what in it?
I guess Chrono Cross, Live Alive. Is Nintendo Switch Sports a boomer game now? Is that what we're getting at?
If we go through the list as far as like what's a remake or like Advance Wars 1 and 2, like that is a remake of a game from 20 years ago.
Yes.
Mario Strikers is a sequel to a game from 15 years ago. Front Mission, that remake.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars.
Even Klonoa is a series that hasn't been around for like 15
Klonoa
years.
Klonoa is a remake port of a remake of a PlayStation 1 game.
Yes.
Assassin's Creed from 10 plus years ago. Chrono Cross from 20 years ago.
Earthbound from...
Yeah, Earthbound from the 90s. Live Alive. Portal. Nintendo Switch Sports, which is basically bringing back Wii Sports, which, you know, in all honesty, is now knocking on the door 20 years. Way closer than you'd want to think about it.
Mario Kart 8 getting DLC for an 8-year-old game.
Although that game is timeless, as has been evidenced by the 40 million.
Do sequels count like that? Like,
yeah, so that's
like,
the one
is
thing.
Every,
yeah, like, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I will say, Mario like, game, I don't totally agree with the point that it's like, oh, it's just for 40-year-olds, but I just saw that and was kind of like, why? And then I looked at it, I was like, I can kind of see where you might be coming from. It is, but it's Nintendo. Like, they've been for 30 fucking years. It's been like, hey, remember that thing from 10 years ago? We got it again.
Well, and I thought we complained about Nintendo being too kiddy. I thought that, is that not a thing we do anymore? I've never heard it. I've never come away from a Nintendo event and have people go like, that was targeted a little old. Like, that, what happened?
I did.
What, is that a thing?
I think there's a bell curve between like when you hit your teenage years, Nintendo is way too kiddy. But then sometimes like somehow it cycles back to being cool again once you're like in your early to mid 20s.
Yeah.
I think my favorite thing too is seeing how many people complained about the Takahashi and Koizumi doing the Switch Sports demo. Mm-hmm. About how like, oh, that really dragged everything down.
Wait, what?
Like people were so mad about that. I'm like, y'all are showing that you did not follow Nintendo during the Wii era.
Lord. Well, that was like what, 90 seconds?
Yeah, it
like
was.
One, it was actually like, okay, I did roll my eyes a little bit because I'm like, oh, there goes 10 minutes of the Direct. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, they just like, that was actually like a really effective way to like cutely show off the, like the motion controls.
Right. And it was,
and like you had some good humor with Koizumi like jumping in wearing the Switch Sports shirt, being like, I'm ready to go. But like, yeah, it was like, what kind of TikTok bullshit do y'all want? Like,
well, and it's, it's not, I mean, this thing was 40 minutes long. And it's not like the rest of it didn't have game. We didn't spend half of it watching Luigi's Mansion in Nintendo Land. Like,
yeah,
it was pretty nonstop stuff the whole time. This was a really good Direct.
It was really fast paced. Like, I was actually almost thankful for how long Switch Sports took because like slowed down. I was able to breathe.
Well, and it's there were, I mean, fast paced, a lot of bangers.
Yeah,
not a lot of duds. Like the smaller stuff was kept to sizzle reels, and we didn't spend too much time on it. And
the Triangle Strategy demo that is out now. I'm gonna download that after we finish recording. Probably
should try that.
Yeah, Getsufuma Den, which was an indie world game published by Konami. Mm-hmm. That's out now. I have no idea if it's any good, but that's basically it. It was a week out now. Direct, but I don't really see that as a bad thing.
Yeah, that's fine as far as scrambling to like find codes for games and cover things go.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of don't. Like, Disney Speedstorm is not a game aimed at 40-year-olds.
Well, neither is Kirby. Or
right.
Like, yeah.
But Front Mission might, you know?
Sure. I'll take Front Mission and Chrono Cross. Yeah, those are, you know, remakes of older
Star Wars
games.
The Force Unleashed is for somebody.
Yeah. There are people who, for some reason, haven't played better action games, and so they like those games.
Hey, guys, Star Wars is so hot right now.
Shadows of the Empire is right there. Rogue Squadron is right there.
Yeah, why haven't they put out Shadows of the Empire? Like, is Shadows of the Empire good? No. But would I play it again? Yes.
Is it better than Star Wars The Force Unleashed? Yes.
Yes.
Having replayed both of them in the past couple years, 100% it is better than The Force Unleashed.
Shadows of the Empire is definitely one of those ones that I can't help but look with rose-colored glasses because I played it when I was 10. But
that's why I played the PC version, to have it feel fresh.
But like, oh man, like one, that Hoth level, and then like just stumbling into the Wampa room in like that second level. So much fun.
Yeah. Well, like the Hoth level that is the basis for how every Star Wars space game would control from that point on. To the point of literally copying the code from that level. Like, yeah.
Yeah, does Rogue Squadron run on that code?
Yeah, Rogue Squadron was built for... That's where they started when they started programming Rogue Squadron, was they got that code from Hoth and started there.
I will accept the Force Unleashed, the Wii version, for some reason, coming to Switch. Can we just please fucking bring back Rogue Squadron? Please.
Yeah.
Just like that trilogy.
Yeah,
like,
the trilogy would be great.
Whatever has to happen, whatever backdoor deals need to be made, I would love to be able to play Rogue Squadron, Rogue Leader, and I guess it would, for completion's sake, it would be nice to have Rebel Strike.
And Naboo Starfighter.
Rebel Strike had co-op levels from Rogue Leader in it, which was cool.
That's bonkers. Like, that's the only good thing about Rebel Strike.
And Rogue Squadron already has a janky PC port that they could build from that would be perfect for Aspyr.
They should, please, just do those games. Those are more interesting than Force Unleashed.
You don't need to go through Star Wars' like edgy period where people were like, I don't know if people think Star Wars is cool. We need the guy named Starkiller. That'll do it.
Next week, we're going to maybe talk Boba Fett.
Oh, yeah.
But until then, Alex, John, thanks for joining me. We'll talk more about stuff in a week from now. Write us in some listener mail. Let us know if there's anything to the direct that we didn't cover as much, or maybe things that we didn't give as much credit. Maybe you're the Star Wars The Force Unleashed Wii fan.
Yes, please write in if you're the Star Wars The Force Unleashed Wii fan. I want to
write us in. connectivity@nintendoreport.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at @connectivitynwr. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Go Kirby, go.
Bye, Klonoa.
Progress.
Just don't buy Star Wars support. I'm going to review that, aren't I?
Probably.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.